The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? Always live and only the only show originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here. Only on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown, along with the absolutely indispensable Shannon McCurchy working the boards. In her book, Story Catcher, Making Sense of Our Lives Through the Power of Story, Christina Baldwin offers this profound thought. Every person is born into life as a blank page, and every person leaves life as a full book. Human beings can best detect what matters when they organize experience into story. Complete with the twists and turns, calamities and conquests, the storyteller discovers a new pathway, and listeners are taken on that proverbial journey to which I often refer, and then return safely to the present. Successful storytellers are seen as real and authentic. They change us for the better. And my guest is the consummate example of this type of teller. Dr. Warren Holloman is professor of behavioral science and director of the Faculty Health and Well-Being Program at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. His credentials are both extensive and impressive, and his book, The Human Rights Movement, Western Values and Theological Perspectives, published in 1989, has been called the best available book-length overview of the current American theological debates about human rights. However, since Warren is also artistically as well as intellectually ambidextrous, he's an emerging playwright. His first play, The Prime of Her Life, received a plethora of recognitions, and his second play, The Comedy of Eros, was selected for Theater Southwest's Festival of Originals. Warren, thank you. You know, it's always great to see guests because I talk to them so often, and it's just amazing when they're actually here because it seems like forever when we finally get to meet. Welcome. So glad that you're here. The Comedy of Eros, what's that about?
Well, have you ever noticed how in Shakespeare's romantic comedies, everything goes wrong and then it turns out right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I tried to write a parody of that in which things go really wrong.
Really
wrong.
And
yet they still turn out right.
Good. Good. Love it. Yeah. Anything that would make Shakespeare interesting, because when shall we three meet again, right? Okay, Shannon, very good. Good. Just checking. Warren, listen, I apologize for not telling our listeners about your other credentials. I know that you don't mind that much, but you're the kind of person that convinces me that we really need a longer show. Tell us a little bit about the mission of the Health and Well-Being Program at MD Anderson.
Well, as you can imagine, working with cancer patients is an extremely rewarding career, but it's also very challenging because when your patients suffer, you also share some of that suffering with them. Yeah. And so it's important for cancer clinicians and researchers to reflect on why it is they do the work they do and to develop networks of social support and take care of themselves so they can better care for others.
What a rewarding occupation that really is. And you're also you also founded and director of the Compassion and the Art Medicine Lecture and Performing Arts series, now in its 25th year. Describe the series to us.
Well, the way I see it, students enter medical school full of idealism and compassion. Something about the training process sucks that out of them, unfortunately. Mm. The goal of that course is to try to put it back in or to keep it there.
How do you do that?
Well, we have a lot of patients who are articulate can come and say what it's like to have a particular disease, the difference a caring, empathic physician or nurse can make.
Yeah. I had asked you earlier, you probably know Rabbi Sam Karef, who was a pioneer in the area of compassion and healing in the Department of Family Medicine at UT Health Science. And good medicine is good communication. I mean, we all know that, or at least most of us should know that. And the stories are a big part of that communication. Patients need to share difficult stories about their pain and fears and must give themselves permission to share them with their caregivers. He always told the story, and I know he wouldn't mind if I shared it, when his wife was first diagnosed with cancer, and this was many years ago, and the doctor said, Mrs. Karef, you know, it is what it is. And she said, what do you mean it is what it is? Well, it is what it is. She said, well, here's something. I'm going to another doctor. And she did, one older and wiser. And the doctor said, well, I agree with the doctor. The prognosis doesn't look good. However, I've been in practice a long time, and I've seen a lot of miracles happen. And if you give me the honor to work with you, perhaps you could be one of them. And that was a long time ago.
Yeah, patients need to hear the truth, but they need to be given reasons for hope as
they
well.
Really do. They do. And hope isn't just a word. It's a verb. We have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm always reminded of Maya Angelou, who said, there's no greater agony than hearing an untold story inside you. And I know that makes good sense to me, given what you do for a living, because you've got these stories inside and they are dying to get out. And you've got to give yourself permission to do so.
Yeah.
Now, this is a terrible question to ask you with just a few seconds, but how do stories heal?
I think it's about identity and community. When I tell my stories and I listen to myself telling those stories, I get a better sense of who I am, what I believe, what my values are, what's important. And when you know who you really are, then you can put up with a lot of crap. It gives you an anchor. Yeah. The other thing is community. If you have people who hear your stories and you listen to theirs, that social support is kind of an analgesic that, again, can help you deal with the pain and suffering and difficulties of life.
Yeah, it really does cause that tremendous connection. It does, it does.
Yeah.
Now, your first story is the one you told to the moth, or a variation of it. It's about hate and why it has to stop. Now, that doesn't sound very profound, but, you know, this is a pretty timely story because hate is running rampant and tolerance is virtually non-existent. And I hate that. and I think that it's also about compassion. And I love the story. I've heard a variation of it. And we're looking forward to it. Tell us the story.
Sure. Well, I grew up in a small tobacco farming community a few miles south of Raleigh, North Carolina. On the north side of Raleigh, about 20 miles from us, was a new upscale suburb called North Hills. In my opinion, that suburb was built to give rich people a place they could move to get as far as possible from people like us. To them, we were the country hicks of the county. Of course, to us, they were a bunch of spoiled rich city slickers. But they did have one thing going for them, and that was called the North Hills Mall, a really cool, new, upscale mall. Well, one Friday night, about 10 p.m., my friend and I were driving home from a high school basketball game. We passed by the mall. He had heard on the radio that the record store was going to have a late-night sale. And so he said, hey, let's stop by. Check it out. We pulled into the parking lot. It was empty. We went into the mall. The stores were closed. There was nobody in there, but we said, oh, when we get to the record store, we'll see the people. We went down a long corridor. I remember a long escalator down to the lower level. It was getting kind of dark and creepy down there. Went to the back corner of the lower level. The record store was closed. It turned out the sale was on Saturday, and this was Friday. So we turned and headed back. It was at that point that we heard the first sound, human sound. We looked up. Five teenage boys our age were leaning over the rail, and they were yelling at us, hey, look at those queers, hey, faggot, you know, that sort of stuff.
Right.
We didn't think too much of it at first, but as we got on the escalator, one of them said, hey, let's go get them, go get the fags, and they took off running. Three came down the down escalator and came up behind us. Two stayed at the top. So we were surrounded. I think our instincts told us to just keep moving, and that's what we did. And it worked pretty well at first, but then they started hitting us and kicking us. It got a little harder to keep moving. I remember they had this thing where two of them would lock arms, and a third would come running and jump onto that arm bridge and swing forward and kick us. My instinct was saying, keep standing, keep moving. But then something happened. I got hit in the back of the head. I remember being dazed, and I remember my glasses went flying across the floor. And it was kind of weird. When that happened, everybody got still and everybody got quiet. Something about the glasses. So I'm thinking, keep moving, keep moving. So I walked over to pick up the glasses, but one of them got there first. He put his foot over them, dared me to pick them up. We had another standoff, more silence. Finally, the big guy spoke. There was one guy who was much bigger than all the rest of us. And he said, no, not the glasses. So I looked around, bent down, picked them up, put them in my pocket. But we couldn't move. They had us surrounded. And then they started this conversation about what to do with us. And I remember very distinctly when one of them said, I know what we do. Let's kill them. Kill the faggots. So that, of course, got our attention. And several were in support of that. Finally, mercifully, the big guy spoke again. And he said, no. Let's let them go. And then a couple of them protested, and he said, I'm not suggesting it. This is what we're going to do. So the wall around us parted. We stepped through it. We kept walking down the corridor, the longest walk I've ever taken. As soon as we still hadn't said a word to each other, as soon as the door cracked open to the parking lot, we took off running as fast as we could. We jumped in the car. We peeled off. Now, the other amazing thing that happened that evening was the conversation that followed. We were completely silent for the first 10 minutes. And then I remember verbatim our brief teenage male conversation. My friend said, we don't tell our parents, we don't tell anybody. And I said, right. And for the next 30 years, I kept that promise. But Hank, I wish I had not.
Wow. That has to be painful to keep that for 30 years.
Yeah.
When was the first time you told it?
I told it to my wife, and I think it was prompted by one of the gay bashings that have happened from time to time, perhaps the Paul Brassard case, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, something like that happened to me, because the case was somewhat similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was it about that, Warren, that you didn't want to share? Why? Was it embarrassment? Was it just, hey, I haven't talked about it for so long, I might as well keep at it? What was it?
Yeah, I've wondered since. Yeah. I think, you know, the standard answer would be shame, and I'm sure that's a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in those days, I didn't talk to my parents about anything.
No, I understand. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. This is Hank Rubicek with Shannon McCurchy, and you are listening to guest teller Dr. Warren Holloman on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston 89.5, in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, or KPFT.org if you're listening online. But whatever avenue you travel to get here, I am very glad that you are here. Well, our spring fun drive begin next week. I hate to shift gears for a moment, folks, but I have to talk to you about this. Yes, I hate asking for money. I really do. But So What's Your Story is more than one of those unique programs in the eclectic programming package here at KPFT. It's a Houston original. The only live storytelling program in town with the poignant narratives and enchanting folktales you've come to enjoy every week. It's a ton of work, and we're paid nothing, but you don't listen in and say, you know what, it's mediocre. But what do you expect when they aren't paid? Nuh-uh. You want excellence, and you get it every week. You know you do, without qualification and without excuses. Great stories told by terrific people from our community. The kind of stories that transform you. You know what would be a really awesome kickstart is if you go to kpft.org, then to donate, tell us your form of payment, and then scroll to So What's Your Story as the program that you designate for your donation. Or give us a call during the show next week, please, at 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT, with your pledge. Either way, I'm going to thank you on the air unless you tell me otherwise. And we have a lot of great guests every week. We've got Warren tonight. We have Ella Bernstein and Kiana Ardroin next week, two more students from Johnson Middle School. We've got a slew of tellers that you obviously are not going to want to miss. And if you listen to this show, you know that. And Shannon, let's not forget to tell everybody about our sponsor.
Hank, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is one of the most influential storytelling groups in the state. They hold monthly story swaps on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 and sometimes even till 9 at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. Learn more about it at HSG by going to HoustonStorytellers.org.
Thank you. Yeah, we do get carried away sometimes. Sometimes we go up to 9 o'clock. You need to join that group.
Yeah.
Well, that's only if the stories really get going well.
Yeah, I mean, you need to join, or if we're fighting with each other. Yeah, either one. Who's not paying the dues? Yeah. But you need to join that group.
Yeah, I heard about it from your show.
Well, and you know.
Well, unfortunately, this week it was flooded.
Flooded, yeah, I know, flooded.
But that will be fixed
before
next time.
So everybody, right, bring your canoe and join us because it'll be really, really wonderful. Nevertheless, listen, tell us a little bit about the Liars contest.
It was a fantastically fun weekend. And this special winner, number one winner, Skip Skipworth, he's from Dallas.
I know him.
He told a great story about being born, which none of us can remember, but he certainly did.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you did a great job boring all of you. I know.
No,
thank you.
Born.
All right. I love it.
Being
love
born.
It. Yeah. That is, oh, being born.
Yes,
okay,
born.
Okay, thank you. Learn to articulate. That's your problem. If you know,
that's
okay.
My problem.
That's great. I had to find something. I have to pick on Shannon every week. It's what we do here. It's policy. Pick on Shannon. If you can't find anything, find something.
But
so I just
expect me to fight back.
All right, yeah. You know, listen, do not walk. Absolutely run to our So What's Your Story Facebook page. It is a masterpiece, and that is no hyperbole. Crafted by Shannon, where she posts stories, events, current feeds, guest information, and photos. And for God's sakes, please like us on the way out. Shannon, you discovered Warren at the Grand Slam Moth Competition. What struck you about him?
I just loved his sense of humor, and he was even sick, but he did a fantastic job. He showed a lot of animation for that. So I saw a spirit and I saw a spunk and a heck of a good story.
Yeah, and if you don't mind my saying, I also like the kind of mature wisdom that he brings to it. I like
that
people.
That was already a given.
Look, Warren and I together are 193 years old, and I think there's something to be said about all of that, right? I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not really, not really. What prompted you to tell the story at the Moth?
It was not what, but who. My daughter Annie discovered the Moth on NPR, told me about it.
Leave it to your kids. Yeah,
and she, I have to give her credit.
Why not? How did it feel to win?
It was very gratifying. I think the most gratifying thing, though, was I remember looking into the bright lights and feeling like the deer in the headlights. Mm-hmm. Then I learned if you look down a little bit, you can see people.
Yeah.
There was a man on the second row who was really into the story, and I could tell he was moved by it. There were tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
And that kept me going.
Yeah. You know, I told a story the night that you were there, not a very memorable one, but nevertheless, you know, and you can't see anything up there.
Yeah.
All you see are lights. It's like a night game at Shea Stadium. You can't see a thing. So if you're interested in maintaining eye contact, who cares? Yeah. It's a big venue, a big, big venue. Your next story is about the magic of touch, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And there's kind of a connection between this story and the other one. It's kind of a theme going on here. Let's kind of jump into it, and then we're going to talk about it. Share the story with us, Ward.
Sure. I'd like to take you back to 1987, the year Shannon was born.
Okay, I was going to say the year I was born, but no one would believe that.
That was an exciting year of new beginnings for my wife and me. We had our first baby, a little girl named Annie, and we were just launching our careers as well. But it was also a time of sad endings that seemed so incongruent with all those happy beginnings. 1987, as you'll recall, was the year that the AIDS epidemic hit really hard, and especially here in the Montrose community where we lived. It seemed like all the young men were dropping like flies. It was just so young men dying. That's not something you're used to seeing. And at the same time, we're having all this newness in our life. So one day the phone rang. My friend said, if you want to see William, that's the name I'll use here, before he dies, you'd better come soon. But first, I need to warn you. First of all, his health has deteriorated since you were last here, including his mind. It's unlikely he will recognize you or your wife or your baby. I said, wow. Secondly, she said, William's mother has finally come to visit. That's the good news. The bad news is because of her prejudice about homosexuality and her fears about AIDS, she won't go near him. Imagine you're dying and your own mother is afraid of you and won't touch you. So with that, we said we need to get over there. So we packed up and headed over. When we got to William's apartment, sure enough, he was lying on his bed in the middle of the living room. And there, as far from William and as far from us as she could get and still be in the room, was his mother, sitting in a chair, facing side, turned sideways. At times she would turn and face us. At other times she would look away. There was a lot of pain in her as well as her son. The second thing I noticed was William's physical appearance. He was as thin as a person can be and still be alive. He was this tall, 6'5", very handsome young man. And to see him like that, I barely recognized him. His mouth was full of these sores. It was hard for him to swallow or talk. His breathing was very labored. Every breath was a struggle. And then, of course, with the Kaposi sarcoma, his skin was not in good shape. But then there was his mind, and my friend was right. He said nothing that made really sense or made us think that he was still in there, in that brain. The one thing he did, though, that made some sense was that he kept making eye contact with our baby. We had been there once before with her, before he had, quote, lost his mind. And he kept looking at her. And finally, my wife and I looked at each other and we said, why not? So we lay her down on his chest. And we stood close because we weren't sure what would happen. Her chest to his chest, her face in his neck. And slowly his scarecrow arms, those long arms, rose up and embraced her. And then the next thing I noticed was that look of pain on his face went away and he looked calm. And then the third thing was he relaxed and the breathing was almost normal. And then he said something I'll never forget. He said, Annie, I'm so glad to see you again, Annie. Now, we had been standing there talking over him because we thought he didn't follow anything we said. And I really don't think he did, but there was something about that baby's skin-to-skin touch that awakened his mind and innervated his spirit. And I've always been grateful that our friend called us and that we went, because 8 hours later, she called again to say that at 4 o'clock that morning, William had died. I just have always viewed that as a gift, not just the gift that our baby gave William, but the gift she gave all of us who witnessed that. To me, it was a miraculous healing. I know he wasn't cured, but I do think on some level he was healed.
Yeah. That's a beautiful story, Warren. That's a beautiful, beautiful story. And the kind of delineation between being healed and being cured is an important one. Being cured isn't possible much of the time, but, healing in my mind is relieving pressures of the mind enough to live for that moment, literally.
Yeah.
We use it as an adage, live for the moment. But living for the moment isn't something we do. I think that people who are healed do. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
In other words, I think that when I feel healed, I'm looking at the moment. I'm looking at my friends around me. I'm looking at my beautiful wife. I'm looking at the television. I'm looking at the Doritos sitting on the table. I'm looking at all the things that I've always taken for granted.
Right.
And I love every moment of it. And I love it all even more. I really do. I look at my dog. I look at my wife. I look at the picture of my son. I call him. Things that really you don't think about when you're not healed. I heal by writing journals, and I think about the words and gestures that come with them, and I think that's exactly what it is. This is beautiful. It's a great story about touch.
Thank you.
You know, touch is the first mode of communication that we experience in life. You know that, and it is also the least deceptive. It's the most genuine. Mm-hmm. In other words, touches don't lie.
Yeah.
You know, touches don't lie. We can manipulate other kinds of nonverbal modes and idiosyncrasies, but touch just doesn't lie. And this story, I think, really punctuates that point beautifully. What is the message that you'd like us to get from these stories? I know that there are many of them.
I never saw a connection between these two stories until you invited me to be on the show. But the connection for me is that human touch is powerful, either to hurt, as in the first story, or to heal, as in the second. So if you have a family member who's sick, they may need your presence and your touch more than they need your words.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say the other message is if someone abuses you, don't be ashamed. Don't keep it a secret. Go on the radio and tell everybody. These deeds of darkness need to be exposed to the light.
And I think that's a beautiful way of phrasing it. Deeds of darkness need to be exposed to the light. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I think our feelings are illuminated. And I just don't think that people who listen to us are the ones who treat us to that illumination. We do it ourselves. We validate ourselves, I think. I think we really validate ourselves. You are listening to guest storyteller Warren Holloman on So What's Your Story? KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Warren, you know, there's so much to cover, and I mentioned this before the show, too, and Shannon's going to make note of this, because we want you back, because there are so many things that I just want to talk about stories and healing, about story keeping, about what stories do in terms of family medicine. There's a lot of things I'd like us to develop, please. But what kind of stories did you enjoy growing up?
Well, my father was quite a storyteller, and he and his brothers told stories about growing up way out in the country near where I grew up during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And those stories really connected me not only to the history of my country and my community, but to my father, and helped me understand why he was the way he was.
And you did some publishing with your brother about the history of your area, wasn't that right?
Exactly. Yeah. We each moved about 1,000 miles away, but we maintained our love for the history of the community. And it took us 35 years, but we wrote a history of our hometown and of the western part of the county where we grew up.
Yeah,
southern,
that's amazing. That's amazing. So your father and your brother, I guess it's safe to say, were your inspiration.
Oh, yeah. He's my big brother.
Yeah. He is your big brother.
Yeah, yeah.
You still talk to him? You're very close
to
him?
Oh, yes. He's
lives
my
around
best
here?
Friend.
Yeah.
He lives in, he is just, he had been living in Pennsylvania. He just recently moved back to North Carolina to the house that we grew up in.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And now he gets phone calls from everybody saying, you're the historian. The latest one was, have you heard that there's a ghost in my house? Like he's supposed to solve that problem.
Yeah, you're the kind of person I'd like to ask, what do you want to do when you grow up? Because there's an awful lot of things you'd like to do, right? You're a playwright, you're an historian, you're a family practitioner, you are a therapist. There's a number of things that you do.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you never want to grow up, right?
Right.
We have to be kids, isn't that right?
I have a lot of things I enjoy doing, yes.
But you have to be kids. You have to be kids. I can't thank you enough.
Thank
this
you.
Was so cool, and I knew it would be, but I think that Shannon would agree. This is so cool, Warren. Thank you so much for your insights and your wisdom, and especially for reminding us never to underestimate the vulnerability of human feelings. You've demonstrated the magic of human compassion, and that we are defined by our character, our courage, and our heart. Don't anybody even think about moving, because Scooter is coming up next with The Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. You'll be good to each other. Until next week, the Fun Drive Week, I'm Dr. Hank reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT is supported in part by Baylor College of Medicine. Does your infant cry and fuss a lot? Researchers at Texas Children's Hospital and Baylor College of Medicine are seeking infants between 14 and 28 days of age who are very fussy for possible participation in a feeding study. You must be able to read and understand English and have telephone access to be eligible. You will be compensated for your time. If you are interested in participating in this study, please contact Cynthia Boot at 713-798-7005 or cboutte@bcm.edu. KPFT, Houston.
Welcome to the Innerside Radio program. My name is Scooter, and I'm the guy whom, I guess 30 years ago,